Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then we consider what you know of the news of the day. The case of Rohana Abdullah has thrown into sharp relief the policy and procedural gaps faced by stateless persons applying for citizenship. Rohana Abdullah, who is now in her 20s, was abandoned as a two-month-old baby and was raised as Muslim by a Chinese kindergarten teacher. Now, the interfaith adoption and Rohana's struggles as a stateless person was reported in the media. It went viral and then caught the attention of the Prime Minister and the Home Minister, who said that they would look into her case. But Rohana is just one of the many stateless persons currently in legal limbo, which deprives them of the many basic rights and resources that citizens enjoy. So what needs to be done to correct this injustice? Our first guest today is Latifa Koya. She's the co-founder of Lawyers for Liberty. Latifa, when you heard about this case, the Rohana Abdullah case, and the attention that it subsequently received, what did that highlight to you about Malaysia's citizenship policy?
Well, the thing is this. Rohana's case is, you know, the facts of the case, of her case, is something which we are familiar with because we've been doing a lot of stateless cases. And what we can see from her case is that she is one of the many, many victims, victim of the government's policy to not follow the constitution. What they're doing is denying Rohana her right by operation of law that she should be a citizen. So the problem that we see is right now, as soon as after her case has been highlighted, the minister, the Home Minister comes on board and says, we will see whether we can help her. And the latest thing that he said was that we'll be verifying her documentation and see whether, you know, we can grant her citizenship or not. Now, this is where the problem is. People need to understand, Rohana actually should be citizen as of right. Under the constitution, someone like Rohana is actually protected. The Malaysian constitution, if you look at it, the part 3 of the constitution talks about citizenship. And within that...
Could you help us clarify? Are you saying that anybody born, any child born in the territory of Malaysia is or has the right to claim citizenship?
No, that's not the case. What I'm saying is that if you are born within this country, not a citizen of any other country, then you can be deemed citizen of this country. So you have to have the second part, which is not a citizen of any other country. That is actually another way of saying someone who is stateless. If you're not a citizen of any other country, then you are stateless. So under the second schedule, part 2 of the second schedule, section 1E, it actually clearly says that, you know, someone who is born in this country, not a citizen of this country, will be by operation of law a citizen. When you say by operation of law, it means automatic citizen. So that is actually within that the constitutional provision given for citizens who are, to be granted automatically. You see, before we go there, there are 3 ways, of course. One can be a citizen by registration, by naturalization, or by operation of law. So most Malaysians, most kids who are born to either one of their parents Malaysian in Malaysia, at the age of 12, they would go to the National Registration Department and get their MyCard, because they fall in those categories of people who can be given citizen by operation of law. Now, if you don't fall in the 4 categories that they have mentioned under the second schedule, part 2, then there is a saving clause. Now, most of us who've been dealing with statelessness have looked at that last section as the section that protects someone from being stateless. And that is where Rohana falls in. She falls squarely in that category. She's born in this country. Right. If we look at the facts correctly, she's born in this country, and she's lived all her life here, and she's not a citizen of any other country. So by right,
Latifa, what does it mean, Latifa, for citizenship procedure, application for citizenship procedure, to not be aligned to the Constitution? So right now, policy is that it is not in line with the Constitution. Is that accurate to say?
Yes. Yes. They've been, so what the Home Ministry have been doing and JPN has been doing is keep pushing away people who should be granted citizenship automatically. They just turn them away without any solution. So if a person falls in any of those categories that I've mentioned, especially, okay, let's say Rohana, when she goes to JPN, they should look at her case and say, look, are you born here? You're not a citizen of any other country. Then we can, issue the My Card or her birth certificate and grant her citizenship. But what do? They don't even give her the right form. You know, they will ask her to make an application. Now, they make her apply as if she's a foreigner or an immigrant asking to be granted citizenship. And what happens is that when she fills up the wrong form, they will send that form to KDN. And this is where then the Home Minister comes in and puts in the process as if he is, by discretion, he is granting her citizenship. That's not how it should be. He should just, basically, the policy should be JPN should start issuing the right form to determine the status or pengesahan, the determination of her citizenship status. So there are many types of forms when someone walks into, JPN. And Rohana, by right, she should not have been put through this whole process from the very beginning. So at age 12...
Latifa, if I can ask you, then...
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a silly question, but why would somebody at JPN give her the wrong form or give her guardian the wrong form?
Well, this is the problem, because there seems to be a policy of breaking the law each time when someone comes and, asks for their right to be accorded citizenship. And hence, we see this huge scandal of thousands of kids who are deprived, So I don't know whether you recall, sometime in 2012, we did a huge march. We, meaning, me and my fellow colleagues, we went to JPN marching with thousands of people who have been given red IC when, in fact, they should be holding blue IC. And at that time, during that time, red IC means that you are just seen as a permanent resident. But if you look at the set of facts, they are born here. They've lived all their life here. And their parents are also born here, and they should be granted citizen based on that particular Section 1E that I mentioned earlier. So there are so many cases like that. So by right,
I was just
giving them the right form.
Right. But I was just about to ask you about how. Sorry. Please continue, Latifa.
Sorry. So what has happened is this: a lot of times they claim to assist people to give their resolve their problems, but what they do is they give them the form which is known as Article 19 form or form Borang 19. Now, if you look at Article 19 of the Federal Constitution, Part 3 of the citizenship, that is for people who are foreigners who would want to be citizens, so they make an application and then they will be subjected to interviews. And if they see them fit to be a Malaysian, you need to, know certain things that they will interview you. And if you pass it, then you can be accorded citizen using the Home Minister's discretion. But that is not the case for people that we are talking about. They are not foreigners. They've lived here all their life, and they've grown up. They've never left the country. They're not immigrants. And so they should be given citizenship as of right. We're not asking the Home Minister to bestow or, use his discretion. We're asking him to just recognize the fact that she is a citizen automatically. So this is where people keep missing it. And I feel so angry when I look at the case of Rohana. You know, it's not like you're doing a favor when you come out and react to Rohana's plight. You should be, in fact, paying her compensation for all the suffering that she has been put through. Because she had to leave school early, she couldn't open an account, bank account. She couldn't live like a normal Malaysian. And why?
Right. How typical is that, Latifa? I want to ask you, because you know, if a stateless person fails through application process, is there's no naturalization process, and has to contest in court, many mm-hmm. stateless persons may not have that avenue. How typical is it for stateless persons to contest their case in court?
Well, I mean, it's rare. I mean, it's only lucky if a stateless person has access to a lawyer who can take up the case, you know, and then go to court. But it's a tedious process. And recently, we have got a few cases that, you know, we got very good judgment where the judges decided to interpret that don't shift the burden of having to prove you're a Malaysian to that child, you know. So the CJ herself had rebuked JPN for pushing the burden of an innocent child to having to prove who her parents are, you know, if they had run away or they've abandoned, you know, it's her fault. And it's not even the parents' fault. It's the government and the state that should be responsible in making sure that they follow the law and give that protection. And the protection is that no one should be stateless.
Okay, Latifa, we're running out of time, but very quickly, do you see a pattern in people who are denied this right to a path to citizenship? Is there a pattern in the demographics, in their profile?
Yes. Yes, certainly. I mean, like I said, I'm part of a small, NGO, right? And we ourselves receive at least one case daily, if I put it on an average basis. And so you can imagine, it's just my outfit receives cases on a daily basis. How many more are out there? So it cannot be a situation where we expect the court to resolve. It has to be resolved by the government and the Home Minister. But the way we look at it, the Home Minister seems to be defiant against the Constitution, and it's unlawful. What they're doing is unlawful.
Latifa, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Latifa Koya from Lawyers for Liberty. We're going to take a quick break. Join us in just a couple of minutes as we continue this discussion on the topic of statelessness. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. However, if you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing how the case of Rohana Abdullah has thrown into sharp focus the policy and procedural gaps faced by stateless persons when applying for citizenship. Joining us now, we have Dato' Dr. Hartini Zainuddin. She's the co-founder of Yayasan Childcare Thini. You have been championing or been an advocate for stateless persons for a long time now. I'm just wondering, what did you make of the case of Rohana Abdullah? Was this a case that you have that was typical or similar? Have you heard similar stories like Rohana before?
Hi. Thank you for having me, first of all. Yes, I have. I actually know of a couple of other cases where there were similar situations of different race adoptive mothers bringing up Muslim children and being in the same situation where the child is stateless, putting in applications, etc. And I'm really, really happy that the Home Minister and the Prime Minister decided to intervene and look at the application, etc. But of course, the statements that came after that was also very familiar as well. Oh, we'll look into the documents. Oh, we have to see if she goes through the proper process. Oh, her documents aren't sufficient. And I just thought, why do you do this? You don't tell applicants what they need. You don't tell applicants what is needed or why they were denied. You don't say anything. You just reject their applications with no understanding and no idea, you know, on the family's part, why they were rejected or what was missing, right? So it's a really subjective, I think, you know, interpretation and sort of, I don't know, drawing a lot and seeing who gets citizenship and who doesn't. It's really subjective.
Dini, we spoke earlier to, we spoke to Latifa Koya, who, you know, suggested that the government has been acting in bad faith in many of these instances, but in that these kids actually have the right to become citizens and don't need to go through these particular hoops. But I do want to ask you, if you have a sense of what is it that the government is thinking when it does reject or when it fails to be transparent in its decision-making process, is there a prejudice against these individuals? Do these individuals, because of their circumstance, sort of not qualify in the mind of many Malaysian bureaucrats for citizenship?
Well, first of all, like I said, you know, I feel like it's very subjective. And they say there's the Department of Citizenship at Ministry of Home Affairs says that, you know, there is a process, there are certain papers that you're supposed to have, there are forms they say you have to fill out, but you fill out those forms, you put in the documents, and you still get rejected, and you have no idea why. You know, some applications will take 2 years, some applications took six, like my daughter's. You know, we have no clue. We simply don't have any idea how this is done. And is there a bias? Absolutely. The bias is that every child is considered a foreigner or someone who is trying to sneak into the country and is a threat to national security until they can prove otherwise. Really, that's number one. Number two, it is never about the child or the best interests of the child. It is this whole, you know, suspicious approach to, you know, ensuring that these children, these people, these families, the assumption is that they're all, you know, here to I don't know. I don't know actually what goes through the mind of the government, but I'll tell you this, I'm not thinking about the person. Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted, because you mentioned that you have to wait years, five, six, 7 years to get a response. Why does it take that long? Is it just because there's just so many cases and there's a backlog that they have to go through?
They
or is
do
it just
have
a bottleneck?
Backlog. Okay. You know, so the process is like this, right? Roughly, it's you put in the application to the NRD, to JPN, right? Jabatan Pendaftaran Negara. There's a rule of thumb, unofficial, of course it's unofficial, right? But usually they take like a year and a half to move that application from JPN to the Ministry of Home Affairs and the Department of Citizenship, right? It's the same ministry, just different buildings, right? But somehow it takes a year and a half to get there. Then when it gets to the department, it takes another year and a half to, you know, sit down with whatever department committee, you know, making recommendations to the Minister of Home Affairs, who then decides finally with the recommendations of this committee, who gets and who doesn't, right? And there are certain criteria, as they say, that you have to have, but we don't know what it is because some take longer, some take, you know, a shorter period of time. So we have no clue. And I think the scary part is that, you know, whoever gets the citizenship gets it with the approval of the Home Minister alone. Home Minister alone, yeah, with the recommendations from whatever committee, he makes the decision.
So, Dini, clearly we're asking you questions that we should be posing to the Home Minister. I mean, he will have, you know, the answers to the questions we've been asking. So let's perhaps ask you questions that you can answer. As someone who's an advocate for stateless kids in particular, can you tell us you know, for the many Malaysians don't quite understand what these kids are deprived of, the kinds of lives they live as a consequence of lacking that piece of paper, that official recognition of them as human beings living in Malaysia.
I'll give you a case. It was yesterday. I had a 12-year-old stateless child adopted by a Malaysian parent. There were complications in terms of how she came to be with this mother. Anyway, this adoptive mother decided to revoke her adoption. The child is stateless, has a birth certificate, but we couldn't get the birth certificate out issued because, you know, there was all this falsifying document. Her Malaysian birth cert that was issued when the child was born was pulled back. Then, of course, you have this complication with, you know, revoking the adoption. We had to go to JPN yesterday in Shah Alam, you know, to get the birth cert, the whole thing, right? And, of course, she's written there stateless. And then we said, okay, you know, because we went with the welfare officer. So I just went to observe because I know this child had pulled her out, you know, and we went through the proper channels, yeah, with the welfare officer to go get. We were there for 2.5 hours, right, just to get the birth cert. And then, of course, we wanted to find out how to apply for citizenship under the ministry, under the social welfare department, you know, and there's this whole process and stuff. And, of course, everybody was friendly because it's JKM, right? But still, we have no idea. We have no idea how long it's going to take. We have to put in the papers, we have to file the police report, but guess who has to prove citizenship? The child. This child, who's a foundling, doesn't know who her bio parents are, who's 12 years old, been moved around from shelter to shelter in the last 6 months, 3 times, is sitting there, and I am just sitting there, just horrified. And of course, the part that gets me is when the welfare officer asked the JPN officer, under which section does she apply? And they immediately go 15B, Article 15B, that which I'm sure Latifa told you, which basically means asking the Home Minister for approval to give her citizenship. And I thought, but she's a foundling. And, you know, you can prove that she was born in this country, right? It's just that her information was all falsified, etc. But you can prove she was born here. Nope, 15B, 15A. And I just thought, here we go again. So that's the process. And this child has nobody, right? Yeah? Nobody.
Dini, I'm just wondering whether there are contemporary forms of statelessness, because we think often of statelessness, you know, of those before pre-Merdeka, post-Merdeka. Are there new forms of statelessness, like the case that you just talked about? And has statelessness transcend generations? Can a stateless person pass on his or her stateless, you know, status to their children?
Yes. So I have siblings now, 4 siblings. The oldest is 23, the youngest is 15, 14, 4 siblings. Parents are stateless, the children are stateless. Now, again, and you know, how are we going to prove citizenship when the parents themselves are stateless, no documents, nothing, right? So how are we going to prove? But they can prove that they were born in this country, they were born in a government hospital, etc. Again, having to go through the process of having to apply for citizenship, you know, being afraid that they're going to get detained if they go to JPN in Putrajaya, etc., because he's 23, he's, you know, phased out of, you know, going under the special protection under 15A, etc., etc. So he runs around in circles because, you know, he has no access to lawyers. We have to find for him. Most of the stateless people are poor because they can't work. It's not just the impact of having no free and equal access to education or health or banking or working or the fear of detention. It is the whole package of who you are, no identity, not belonging to any country, even though you say you can prove that you're born in Malaysia. This oldest child who's 22, 23, wants to be a soldier. He wants to serve this country. Guess what? He's not going to be able to. Not until he gets his citizenship. And he has to prove this. And so are there categories? Absolutely. There are something like 10 categories. So you have, you know, foundlings, like the first case I was mentioning that happened yesterday. There are these kids who are generations and generations of stateless, of being stateless. There are children who are trafficked, whose papers are gone. There are, you know, children in Sabah that we're talking about, families, communities, generations and generations. You know, the list goes on. We can name 10 categories easily. Easy.
Okay, Jeannie, as an advocate for people who are stateless and kids who are stateless, I don't know if the route of compassion is a one that's going to be winning the argument at the end of the day. What other ways can we make the argument for a policy that is inclusive, that actually tries to regularize statelessness, stateless people, and bring them into the mainstream of society? What arguments are there?
Well, first of all, let's not say that these children crawled into this country by themselves. Most of them were born in this country. Let's just be clear about that, right? Number one. Number two, they are not this national security threat. The national security threat is when you deny them access to basic needs, health, education, etc., because you are creating deliberately, through man-made policies, this whole underbelly of people who are clawing their way just trying to survive. And when you do that, then bad things happen, right? Spread of disease, etc., crime, the worst. But it's not the fault of children. You put them in this situation. You don't allow them the right to basic needs. You lay this on them, right? So and then that's one of the biggest crimes I think that's committed, which is the most stupid thing, you know, this government and the policies that are in place are doing. The most stupid and the most criminal and most hideous, I think, of thing, when you deny a child a right to identity, to say, I belong to this country. You tell them they belong nowhere, that they belong to someone else. And that's rubbish. That's number one. Number two, that you don't care about child, best interest of the child. Please don't ever tell me it's best interest of the child to deny them any basic needs, because that is absolutely nonsense. And that is a crime, a crime against humanity and a crime against children. Okay, I'm the child person. But then, of course, they grow up and they become communities, and you see these young people around stateless. And then you call them foreigners. Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. And I just want to thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight, sharing your insights.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me again.
Hartini Zainuddin of Yayasan Chowkit. We're going to wrap this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.